This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central, and we've had a really good conversation around tech solopreneurship and some of the things that any of you who are in that current space can do to just fast track the journey a little bit, make it move a little bit bigger, quicker, stronger in a shorter space of time. So Klubi is busy talking to our previous guests. In studio, though, we have two guys who are no strangers to the Cliff Central studio nor the Future CEO show. Welcome back to the show, guys. Lex Nove, founders. Oh, there's Klubi.
Klubi's back.
Yeah, she is. Carl and Andrew, welcome back into
Thank
the studio.
We've missed you.
Thank you. Good to see you guys.
It's been
ages.
We used to have you on here regularly, but suddenly you guys became too...
You guys got too cool for us.
No, I think it was the other way around. I think Lex grew too quickly. And suddenly,
they didn't have time for us
anymore. Yeah, they're traveling to Cape Town, incubators, and all these kinds of things. So anyway, how is Lex Nove going, guys?
Very, very good. Obviously, we've done a lot of growing since we launched on the 9th of July last year.
Well done.
Still a lot of growing to go. But it's been a fantastic journey. It really, really has.
Yeah, I think that's kind of one of the best ways to start off is to say that it is actually a journey, and we like to call it the startup roller coaster, and it is absolutely that. So we've gone through a lot of highs and a lot of lows, but overall, I think it's been one of the most rewarding experiences either of us have ever been involved in. So we're stoked.
We're glad to hear that. But on that journey, and on any journey, certainly in the startup space, there are going to be mistakes that we all make. And the mistakes we learn from, but some are more important than others to not learn from, and those are the legal mistakes.
Sure.
There are a lot of these mines. So it's a bit of a minefield, isn't it? You guys are in the legal space. We then reached out to them, when was it? A few months ago, and we said, guys, can you put together something for us that we can distribute to our Future CEOs community? And they put together this ebook. And so if you guys want to get hold of that, please, you must go to future-ceos.com/ebooks, and you'll be able to find it there amongst some other content as well. But today we're going to be talking a little bit. We're going to touch on some of that content and talk. How did we say it?
Five legal mistakes that SMEs make and should try to avoid.
Exactly. So let's jump straight in there. But Andrew, I see you wanting to say something before we get.
No. That's I actually just wanted to correct you around the timeline of this ebook. What actually happened is Gareth said to us, "We'll write this, and you only have 8 days to do it."
First week of January as
you
well.
Let me just explain what happens. If you want something done, don't tell people they've got 3 months to do it, okay? You must tell people that they've got a week or 8 days or whatever it is. But it's very, very good, guys. I mean, I've looked at it. Very good. So thank you.
Yeah,
anyway, let's go jump into those
legal mistakes. Number one.
So I think the primary legal mistake that a number of entrepreneurs and SMMEs make is leaving legal too late. Just in general. And I think that's a nice catchphrase to color the entire conversation.
It is very nice.
What do you mean by that?
So leaving legal too late, as a startup founder, it's never your first priority to make sure that your founding documents are in place or that your IP is registered and protected or that the lease agreement that you're actually signing doesn't contain a surety clause, for example. Or there's a range of different issues that you push to the side because you focused on running the business.
Correct.
And to a degree, that has to happen. But on the other side, the after effects of that can be very expensive.
I was just about to ask, what are the consequences of not sticking to these five legal mistakes? So we need that angle of the conversation.
So absolutely. I mean, they're obviously very, very expensive school fees that you will be paying in the event that you don't take the steps correctly. And obviously, it's the difficulty with the legal services sector and entrepreneurship, and this is something that's obviously one of the fundamental drivers behind LexNove, is the fact that there is this disconnect between entrepreneurs and the legal service and legal services, and that's obviously informed in part by the price of legal services. So if you're a startup owner and I say to you, it's going to cost 25,000 rand to register a patent or 50,000 rand for your MOI, you're rather going to apply that to advertising and actually creating a business that's worth protecting as opposed to getting a document in your possession.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you asked about the consequences of the mistakes, and I think those are like very varied. And these are some of the issues that Kyle and I will discuss and have addressed in the book.
Okay.
You know, IP is one of the key ones.
Which is intellectual property. For
thank you. No, I was just about to
Yeah, so intellectual property is actually very important, and Kyle's an IP expert, so I'll leave that to him. But I think one of the other things is if you are a founder and you don't have your agreement with your co-founder tied down or with your investors, shareholders' agreements and MOIs operate as the playbook against which you operate your company, and the rest of the world operates in relation to your company.
Love that explanation.
So those are really important.
Kyle?
Maybe, yeah, delving into a little bit more detail from an intellectual property point of view, not everyone can program. So often, if you're a tech co-founder, you might outsource the programming of your website.
Mm.
But not everyone understands that by outsourcing it to a subcontractor, by default, the subcontractor will own the intellectual property rights to that code base.
It's not even something that has ever occurred to me, and I feel like I'm fairly in the know. Thank you very much for that. Point number one goes to Kyle.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. So we've dealt with it in the ebook. So essentially what you're going to look to do is have a subcontract agreement where the rights that are created by virtue of the subcontractor programming your website are automatically assigned to the person who instructed that. That is very important and can obviously have a lot of startups come short in their pursuits of conquering the world.
Mm.
Second issue.
This is such an important segment of the show.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, Andrew.
So I think I touched on it briefly earlier about the foundational documents. So when I say foundational documents, what I'm really referring to is as a company that you register with the CIPC, what happens is that...
CIPC?
The
Companies and Companies Intellectual Property, Property Commission.
Commission. Okay. So it was CIPRO, but it's new. The new name is the CIPC, so the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission registers the company, and those are the people that you send your documents to. And if you're very lucky, their system doesn't crash, and you actually get a return from them, and it says, congratulations, you've registered futureceos.com,
yeah,
or whatever the PTY limited is.
Okay.
As part of the regulatory framework within which companies operate, you need to have a memorandum of incorporation. And if you don't elect to adopt a customized memorandum of incorporation, the CIPC takes it upon themselves to assign one to you. And that's really a blanket MOI that affects all companies that haven't adopted their own MOI.
And if I may jump in there, so I mean, your MOI really determines what happens in your business, how you deal with certain issues, maybe conflict, all sorts of different
duties,
aspects of the business.
Yeah.
Correct.
And so having a blanket, untailored MOI, any kind of paperwork is going to really not do you or stand you in good stead, especially if your business is unique or
absolutely
has a particular kind of angle that you need but isn't being catered for in just this default setting that they seem to have.
Yeah, correct. So I think that's actually a good point to raise. And that's particularly why it is worthwhile investing in a custom MOI, is because when you create a custom MOI that's drafted particularly for your business, you're allowed to choose what provisions in the Companies Act to an extent apply to you or don't apply to you. So there are certain provisions which are known as alterable or unalterable provisions, and obviously you can elect out of the alterable provisions which ones you'd like to utilize in your company. And a lot of the alterable provisions are ones which, particularly in a startup or entrepreneurial context, you'd actually like to exclude. So they include things like compulsory audits, the appointment of finance committees, and again, these are the types of things that we've discussed before on the show, which add a lot of bureaucratic burden to a startup, which it doesn't really need. I mean, you really want to focus on your business, getting your product to market, getting your distribution channels right. You don't still want to worry about an annual audit necessarily.
Another meeting.
Correct.
But what's so important here is that these documents can change on an ongoing basis. They can evolve just as your business evolves as well. So we mustn't think that the starting point is the only point. There is an evolution, and there always will be. Carl, you were going to raise another IP point on IP.
Yeah, somewhat IP related. I think it's very misunderstood amongst co-founders and anyone actually registering a company. Quite often people think that just by reserving a company name, they've got the exclusive rights to it. But what they don't often realize is that that is one particular small register held by the CIPC. The other is trademarks, and a trademark is an entirely separate register. So quite often people can reserve a company name, start trading with it, then only sort of several years down the line do they realize that they don't have the exclusive rights to it. Someone else has a registered trademark. Damn. They've been trading with it, and unfortunately they've got the costly exercise of having to rebrand. So that's a very important distinction between company registrations versus trademark registrations.
Did you do this with Lexnode, guys? Did you eat your own dog food?
Yes, we ate our dog food. Like it was literally a month long negotiation between us and some of our investors getting these documents up and going.
So, okay, just checking.
Yeah, I know for sure. So another thing that I think is important, and to clarify some potential misconceptions amongst the listeners, is the difference between a shareholders agreement and a memorandum of incorporation.
That's a good point.
So a shareholders agreement is a private document that has been entered into amongst the shareholders, and it's supposed to regulate that relationship and the relationship between the shareholders and the company. So one of the changes that came about under the 2011 Companies Act is the advent of this MOI taking precedence over a shareholders agreement. So let's say, for argument's sake, that our shareholders agreement says all four of us need to agree to change the name of the company. But in my MOI, all it says is I need a special resolution to be passed, which equates to 75% of the shareholding. We would then be able to rely on the MOI to pass that resolution, despite the fact that the shareholders agreement says something else.
So if you don't like someone in your business, just don't show them the MOI. Yeah. Okay.
Gotcha. Andrew, are you going to continue?
No, that's cool. So the difference is that...
Sure, this is heavy stuff, people, yeah?
With an MOI, it's regulated by the Companies Act versus a shareholders agreement, which is a private contractual relationship. You are regulated by contractual law. So there are some distinctions that come into play in terms of the interpretation of these contracts that may be relevant.
Listen, guys, like, coming from a place like mine, like, you want to get into the entrepreneurial spirit, this is... big bucks that you're talking about, just to get these things into place. What other thing can you advise entrepreneurs to do whilst going into the path of not making these mistakes financially? Because let's talk money.
Sure, I don't want to plug our company too much.
I know.
Wait, I'll save you here, Carl. I think what's important is, like, without trying to plug Lexnove, what I actually think is very important is that there is, globally speaking, a shift towards getting value out of your legal services.
Correct.
And one of the ways that you can do that is to request a fixed price when you're negotiating with a lawyer. So they know within a couple of rand what it's going to cost them to draft an agreement, and for them to put down a fixed price gives you certainty, and you understand exactly what the extent of your exposure is, what it's going to cost you, and there's no nasty surprises at the end about individual phone calls that have been billed. I think that kind of
traditionally hourly rates incentivizes the lazy. So if I take 5 hours to draft a letter and my colleague over there takes an hour to draft the same letter, I'm more valuable to the company. So fixed prices is, I think, very, very important. And I think it's becoming a far more growing trend the worldwide in respect to professional services.
Okay.
So attorneys, I think, are far more willing nowadays to look at that.
So let me just finish the plug. So Lexnove, come in here, and that's where you guys are operating. You're really providing a space, a marketplace for that kind of fixed price transaction to occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Now, and then that's where we'll stop with the plug. but to your point though, I mean, there are other things beyond. Let's move beyond what you just said. How else can guys mitigate or reduce the costs involved in legal? The proceedings in their organizations. I mean, startups specifically. I mean, it's a very, very. It can be a very, very costly thing. So, what do we do? Do I go and download a template and adapt it as best as I possibly can, given the very limited legal knowledge that I have? Can I do that? What are we talking about here? And by the way, sorry, let me just add. Can I do that? Bring it to you, and say, guys, this is what I've done. These are the provisions that I've made, or these are the adjustments that I've made. What do you think? And would that cost less, or what are we talking about? I mean, how negotiable is this?
Be creative.
Well, we would always advise against taking or utilizing template agreements. If you do, make sure it's South African context specific.
Yeah.
You don't want references to the IRS or something that really isn't South African applicable at all. So if you
and that actually happened. We had an agreement that someone sent to us last week that had a reference to the Internal Revenue Services of the United States of America.
Okay.
And I was like, well done on downloading a template.
Or the jurisdiction to sort out any disputes being a court based in the UK or the US. It doesn't serve any purpose whatsoever.
Sure.
So at the very least, yes, adapt a template and take it to a lawyer to look over. That'll obviously curtail costs very well. But I would always advise against going or utilizing templates. It really, really is dangerous unless a qualified expert attorney has a look over it with expertise in that specific field of law.
Good point. Let's jump back into the mistake. Sorry.
Point number, where are we at? Three?
I think we're around three.
I think we're at five or six. So these are all bonus points.
Exactly.
Andrew, let's carry on. Next point.
I think that something that people need to bear in mind and a mistake that's often made is, and it seems rather cynical perhaps, but unfortunately it's indicative of the climate in which we live, and that's trusting people for their word. And look, I'm a huge proponent in saying, look, I'll back you and take you at your word, and I know you're going to pay me 50 rand at the end of this month because you said you would. But I think something that's to be borne in mind, both as it relates to partners in a business and to your customers or your suppliers, is that everybody gets into this thinking that we're doing this for our mutual benefit. And it's exactly as David Kaplan earlier said, it's like a marriage, but marriages have a 50% failure rate in South Africa. So are you going to risk being one of the two that don't make it? Or are you going to take out an insurance policy in the form of a customer agreement, for example? And really what you'd look to do in a customer agreement is to regulate what your rights as either a service provider or a product provider are in relation to your client's rights to pay you, to not steal your employees, for example, or to not circumvent you and go around to your suppliers, how it relates to your intellectual property. So these are some of the key provisions that you want to look to include with your customer agreements.
I think an important point here is that if you are dealing with someone that is going to be offended because you want them to sign a document which is a non-disclosure agreement or whatever it is, whatever it happens to be, then they're probably probably not the right people for you to be working with anyway. It's just there for exposure mitigation. That's really what it is, and things happen, and if someone can't see it, well, then probably walk away.
But that's the thing. I mean, everybody gets into this thinking, okay, let's make this happen, let's work this business, or agree to provide you with 500 units of whatever that is. But in the event that it doesn't, or someone, for example, thinks twice about whether they can or can't pay you in this manner, or whether they can or can't deliver in this manner, then all you do is you go back to the agreement.
Correct.
Which is what makes it a difficult concept to sell to a client, is because often it's a hidden asset. So you don't actually see the value of an agreement until you actually need to pull it out and you know, rely on it. And oftentimes, if you've got a well-drafted legal agreement, the propensity for people to try and abuse the system, as it were, is much lower, because they think, well, can I do this? Oh no, the agreement specifically says no, I can't. So therefore they don't. So you have a decreased number of disputes arising if you've got a good agreement in place.
Bonus point number 3?
13.
13, yeah. Where are we? About 9 now. I think something that's very important is the disclosing of patentable inventions prior to them being patented.
What does that mean?
So often, for example, you might have developed a fancy new hinge for a chair. I don't know what it may be, but it's something that is patentable. Let's look at computer software, which has a practical effect on the front end, much like when you scroll through your Apple iPhone, the way it bounces on the bottom of the screen is a patentable practical effect, which was in fact patented.
Okay.
Now, if that effect is put in the public domain or disclosed to the public prior to it being patented, it is no longer patentable.
Okay.
So I think that's very crucial. A lot of guys that we've encountered have, without even realizing this provision in the Patents Act, disclosed it to the public, and unfortunately they're in a position where it can no longer be patented.
So I've got a question here, because these things take one hell of a long time to get cleared. How do you function as an entity if you've got a great idea? The timing is now, but you have to now go and go to the patents office, do whatever you need to do, but it takes 3 years to get something cleared. What do you do?
Well, you get the protection or quasi-protection from the date that you lodge.
Okay.
So if I go and lodge a trademark today or a patent today, I can then start trading, normally under provisional patent or at least a trademark application at that point, although not registered. So it's good from that perspective, and at least the slow workings of the CIPC hasn't completely inhibited people from trading during that period. Mm. So
work continues.
Exactly.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Nice. Sure.
Answers
a nice
lots of people's questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we carrying on? Do you have more?
Yeah, I mean, we can come up with more.
Okay, let's come up with one more. Is in the final chapter of this free ebook. And that is, it's got to do with people, personnel, you know, employees.
Employment.
Yes.
Wow. Why such long faces? People, yeah.
So I think the whole issue with employment agreements is that you need to balance the commercial interests of the company and the personal private interests of the employee. And it's historically been an incredibly difficult thing for people to do, or for legislation to achieve. And obviously we've got the Basic Condition of Employment Act, as well as the Labor Relations Act, which seek to regulate our employment regimes. And one of the things that people often ask us is, how do I make sure that my employee, who knows everything about my business, doesn't actually steal my client, steal my idea, take it somewhere else?
Nice one.
And that's known as a restraint of trade provision.
Yes.
So that's a classic example of where you're trying to balance those two competing interests. Here, on the one hand, you have the company, which wants to protect its intellectual property, its supplier list, its customer list, whatever it may be. And on the other hand, you've got a guy who's maybe trying to make a break and go and build his own enterprise. So he wants to go and do something else with this information.
Okay.
So those two competing interests often butt heads, and the way that they've been historically resolved is through a restraint of trade clause.
Mm.
And what's important in relation to a restraint of trade clause is that it needs to be reasonable in its application. Mm. So that's the primary criteria that a court would use when assessing this. How reasonable is it? And that reasonableness relates to its application as far as the territory it's concerned. So I can't, for instance, say that
open
Gareth
up right next door.
Well, Gareth is never allowed to go and work in another radio station for the rest of his life, because this is a specific skill that he's developed, and this is the way that he makes his money.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you know.
Well, we think so.
Look, I don't know if any other place would take me. But anyway, move on.
So it needs to be reasonable in terms of the territory that it applies to. It needs to be reasonable in terms of the duration that applies.
Okay.
So you can't, for instance, have a...
So it's time and location and...
Correct.
And scope.
Yeah, and
scope.
Obviously the scope of the restraint. Mm. So
give us an example of scope.
So the scope of the restraint is... I mean, you've got
like Gareth being prevented from working as a restaurateur, for example, being a radio presenter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's an example of far too wide a scope.
Yeah, okay. just way outside of what the restriction should be. I mean, surely I'd make a good restaurateur as well. I don't like it when these guys laugh like that, especially on air. But anyway, guys, we've run out of time. We're going to shut you down.
Such a good point coming up. No.
Okay.
They'll have to read the ebook for it.
But that's exactly the point. So I mean, we have covered a lot of ground here. We have spoken about a lot of important, very important things that often people don't see, as you mentioned, Andrew. So please go to future-ceos.com/ebooks. It's all free. It's there for you. What do we do here on the show? Use your words again. Those three that you love.
Amplify, catalyze, and advocate. Yeah. Entrepreneurial spirit.
Exactly. And so we're doing this for you. Andrew and Carl have come into the studio for you. They've put a lot of hours in for you. Klubi, we're here for them as well.
Over our December period, no less.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, guys. By the way, that wasn't in the contract. There's no overtime. Anyway, all right. Guys, thank you very much for your insights. Thank you.
Always, always. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you very much for having us.
Needed to hear that.
Next week, we have some big guests coming in. And yeah, it's going to be an exciting show. Make sure that you join us then. Hlubi, a final word from you?
Always surround yourself with people that are smarter than you.
Very, very good. Yes. Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of your week.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.